Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, October 7th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Albany Cardiothoracic Surgeons, providing patient-centered heart surgery for over 40 years in the Capital Region, practicing cardiac surgery at St. Peter's Hospital, ACTSURG.com. Joining us for Medical Monday is Dr. Ami Nagandi of New York Oncology Hematology. She practices out of NYOH's office at Albany Medical Center and is in the studio today to answer your breast cancer questions. This promises to be a popular show. Medical Monday usually is, so I would say call early if you have a question. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Ami Nagandi and your calls coming up right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Medical Monday, and Dr. Ami Nagandi of New York Oncology Hematology joins us today. She practices at NYOH's office at Albany Medical Center, a board-certified medical oncologist and hematologist. She received her medical degree from the Robert Wood Johnson Medical School at Rutgers University. Dr. Nagandi has a special interest in breast cancer and joins us today to discuss advances in treating this disease. If you have a question, give us a shout. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org, but the number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Ami Nagandi, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Are you excited?
Yes, it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, October.
I did not know that. So what happens in Breast Cancer Awareness Month? People are aware of this anyway. So what special things happen?
I think the nation goes pink.
Well, I know that. I've seen that.
A lot of awareness campaigns for women to get their mammograms, awareness of different ways breast cancer can present, the importance of knowing your family history.
Let's talk about that for a minute, family history. If you have a mother or a grandmother who has or had breast cancer, then what does that make your odds?
It depends on how old they were when they were diagnosed with breast cancer.
Yeah.
And then when the subtype of breast cancer is known, that can certainly make an impact. But the age at which they were diagnosed makes the biggest impact. So knowing your family history, including the men in the family.
Right.
Breast cancer genes, although we call them breast cancer genes, are also associated with pancreatic cancer, prostate cancer, low risk of melanoma, too.
Now, there is a genetic marker that is pretty accurate as far as breast cancer and your odds for getting breast cancer?
So the two most well-known genes are the BRCA1 and 2 genes. Those are the most well-known in the common population. But now we know there are many more other genes out there that could be associated with a breast cancer risk, not as high as the BRCA1 and 2. But certainly can confer an increased risk. So women who did undergo this genetic testing, if they underwent genetic testing before 2013, 2014, may qualify for further genetic testing, which we call panel testing. It's to look for genes that are other than the BRCA1 and 2 that are associated with an increased risk of breast cancer.
In the mammogram itself, how early is too early? In other words, at what age should a woman begin getting mammograms?
So we generally recommend at the age of 40 years old to begin getting mammograms. There may be a role of getting a baseline mammogram when a woman is in her 30s, depending on her risk factors, how dense her breasts are, things like that. But in general, it's age of 40 is when we recommend women should start getting yearly mammograms.
Now, why is density an issue?
So breast density can obscure a certain percentages of breast cancers on a mammogram. So for women that I see, and I see a high-risk population, majority of my patients have already had breast cancer. Women who have increased breast density, I get an ultrasound in addition to mammogram that might be able to pick up some abnormalities that the mammogram may not do to their breast density.
Is the ultrasound more effective than the mammogram? In which case, why wouldn't we just do ultrasounds?
So the ultrasound is definitely not more effective than the mammogram.
Right.
It helps give more information in addition to a mammogram. Not all women need an ultrasound.
We are joined today by Dr. Ami Nagandi of New York Oncology Hematology, and we talk breast cancer on today's Medical Monday. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You mentioned that it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month. What is the biggest misconception about breast cancer? What does the average person get wrong about breast cancer?
I think that lack of family history means you can't get it, or your chances of getting it are really low. 90% of breast cancer is not familial.
And if you live long enough, are your odds very good of getting breast cancer if you live to 90?
The latest statistics say, you know, depending on where you look, 1 in 8 or 1 in 10 women are going to get breast cancer. That in the United States, that's a pretty high number.
At what age? What's the average age of onset?
Average age of onset is postmenopausal, 60s, 70s.
Do we know why that happens? In other words, do we know why 60 is the age?
The majority of breast cancer is estrogen and progesterone receptor positive. So it's driven by estrogen. And a lifetime exposure to estrogen, and after women are postmenopausal, our bodies still make estrogen, just not from our ovaries. So that lifetime cumulative exposure can lead to breast cancer, even when your ovaries aren't working and they're not making estrogen.
Then does hormone therapy, can that work to stave off possible onset of breast cancer in someone who might be a high risk?
Correct. And in women who have had an abnormal mammogram or have abnormal breast cells but not breast cancer, many of those women would qualify for what we call a breast cancer risk reduction agent, which is an anti-hormone pill.
Really? And the anti-hormone pill negates the effects of the hormones?
It lowers the risk of developing breast cancer. It doesn't make your risk zero, but it can, in women who are at higher risk, can significantly lower the chances of developing an estrogen-driven breast cancer.
Let's talk about immunotherapy and the advances in immunotherapy in treating breast cancer.
In March 2019, got our first FDA approval for immunotherapy in breast cancer with an agent called atezolizumab. It works totally differently than anti-hormonal therapy, works totally differently than chemotherapy. It works through the body's immune system. And what atezolizumab and other immunotherapy drugs similar to it do is gets rid of the checks and balances our body has on immune cells called T cells. So our body has these checks and balances that prevent us from making too many T cells. And this immunotherapy basically gets rid of that check. So your body makes a lot of immune cells, and those immune cells have been shown to help fight cancer.
You know, one thing anyone who has been through any kind of cancer chemotherapy says is, you know, that's often as bad as the illness. Immunotherapy, are there less side effects than traditional chemo?
For the world of breast cancer, we're lucky in that immunotherapy has been used for several years now in melanoma and lung cancer, and most recently bladder cancer as well. So the side effects are very different than chemotherapy. They're all immune mediated. In general, in the patients I've treated with immunotherapy, it tends to be better handled with less side effects. The side effects are totally different. So we look for different things like thyroid dysfunction and rashes, as opposed to the side effects we worry about in chemotherapy. So this particular atezolizumab was FDA approved in March 2019 to be used in conjunction with chemotherapy for women who have triple negative breast cancer.
And triple negative being?
Triple negative being the estrogen receptor, progesterone receptor, and HER2 are all negative. Mm. And in women with triple negative breast cancer, especially breast cancer that is either unresectable or metastatic, means it's gone outside of the breast to other organs, the bones, can particularly be hard to treat.
Mm. Our number here is 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Dr. Ami Nagandi of New York Oncology Hematology, and we talk breast cancer today. What is the survival rate as compared to, say, 20, 25 years ago?
So it depends on what type of breast cancer we're talking about. In general, women with early stage breast cancer, meaning breast cancer that was picked up on a mammogram, was pretty small, those women are expected to have recurrences of less than 10%.
Mm-hmm.
The triple negative breast cancer population, this more aggressive subtype of breast cancer, that number's a little bit worse. But in general, with diagnosing breast cancer early, that's really the key in being able to cure somebody.
Are you hopeful for the future?
Oh, I'm very hopeful. I think the leaps and bounds in cancer care, breast cancer and other cancers that we've seen just in the last decade are astounding. They're mind-boggling, and they're awesome for patients.
Dr. Ami Nagandi is our guest, and you ready to take some calls? We'll do that in a minute. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Medical Monday, 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop, Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. We are talking breast cancer today with Dr. Ami Nagandi of New York Oncology Hematology. And now we'll take a couple of phone calls. We go to Barbara in Great Barrington. Barbara, you're on.
Hello, doctor. I have to be relatively vague about this. I'm sorry. A family member has been diagnosed with breast tumor, and due to her age and her heart condition, she's elected not to have surgery, but instead is using tamoxifen. And I was wondering if that's the smartest thing to do.
What is tamoxifen?
Tamoxifen is an anti-estrogen agent.
Okay.
Specifically, it works at the level of the estrogen receptor.
Mm-hmm.
So it's anti-estrogen in the breasts, but actually can cause growth of the uterine lining in the uterus.
Okay.
And so it has different effects in different areas of the body. The main thing is we use it for breast cancer because it suppresses estrogen in the breast tissue. So I think this is a little bit of a complicated situation where we want to look at the whole patient and make a good decision for the whole patient. So the curative procedure in breast cancer is surgery. If you can't get surgery, you can't cure breast cancer. What you can do, though, if you can't get surgery for whatever host of reasons, is tamoxifen can help shrink a tumor. So if tamoxifen is going to shrink this cancer and make it small enough, where at which point she might be able to get a smaller, less extensive surgery done, that could be helpful. But tamoxifen, you know, could either shrink this or keep this from growing, which allows somebody to have less, prevent somebody from developing symptoms of breast cancer they otherwise would have gotten if they didn't take tamoxifen.
So it would be hard for you to do a diagnosis like this over the phone. Is that correct?
Correct. I mean, I think to say, is that the smartest choice? In some of my patients, it is the smartest choice. You know, women, and 1% of breast cancers are diagnosed in men, so we can't forget our men. But in patients with breast cancer who have other medical issues who are not candidates for surgical resection, we can look to things like tamoxifen, other agents, to see if we can control a tumor if we can't cure it.
Okay, Barbara, thank you for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And we go to Joseph in Chatham. Joseph.
Hello, doctor. My mother passed away from breast cancer about 7 years ago, and both my sisters tested positive for the BRCA gene, and they've been getting annual mammograms, but I'm strongly concerned about the amount of radiation they're going to get over their lifetimes, and wondered why the medicine is not using thermography, because cancers form due to a process called angiogenesis, and you're going to see temperature increases in the tissue.
All right, let's talk about thermography a little bit. Now, we had an email about this as well. So follow up, tell us what it is and how it compares to mammography. No? Okay, fair enough. So that might be one that's outside of our guest's expertise, Joseph, but thank you very much for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Breast cancer today on Medical Monday, and Dr. Ami Nagandi is our guest. Let's go to Jim in Matamoros. Jim, you're on.
Is it true that there's a large number of reoccurrences in patients that were thought to be cancer-free 25-30 years ago?
I wouldn't say there is a large number of recurrences, but women, especially women who have estrogen and progesterone receptor positive breast cancer, those women can have breast cancer recur years later. Cokie Roberts was recently in the news,
right,
because she died from complications of breast cancer. She was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2002, and her cancer recurred in 2016, and she succumbed to it earlier this year. So I think it's absolutely possible that 20 or 30 years, certain types of breast cancer, specifically estrogen and progesterone-driven, can come back, which is why in all of our studies, and the good thing about breast cancer is it's a very well-studied cancer, the risk of recurrences in women with early-stage breast cancer are getting lower and lower. Unfortunately, the risk of recurrence isn't zero.
Do we know why it's getting lower and lower?
Our treatments are getting better, and number two, we're diagnosing women earlier and earlier due to more women getting their screening mammograms and manual breast exams and being aware of their breasts.
There has been so much made and so much research done about environmental factors. What have we learned in the last 10, 15 years about environmental factors as a cause of cancer or breast cancer specifically?
So one question I get a lot from my patients is soy okay? So we know soy is okay. That's not been linked to increased risk of breast cancer. And that was looking at a study in women in China who ate a lot of soy, and their risk of breast cancer weren't elevated. So
why was that even thought to be a thing?
Because soy can be metabolized to an estrogen-like compound in our bodies.
Ah.
And so the thought is, does soy increase our estrogen levels, which can lead to breast cancer? So soy is okay. One thing that has been associated with risk of breast cancer is obesity.
Mm-hmm.
Our fat cells make estrogen.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to eat a healthy plant-based diet. We want to exercise. Those things can be helpful besides genetics. The other thing is alcohol. So there's some, the way our body metabolizes alcohol in the liver can put you at, it can increase your risk of breast cancer. So the recommendation is to minimize alcohol intake, specifically less than 5 alcoholic beverages per week on average.
Our guest today is Dr. Ami Nagandi of New York Oncology Hematology, and we talk breast cancer on a Medical Monday. We go to Chris in Sandgate, Vermont. Chris.
Hi. Thank you all. I was wondering, my mom had breast cancer, and it traveled to her armpit. Now, how does that happen?
So I'm assuming it was the armpit on the same side of her breast cancer, correct?
Yes.
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 So 85% of the blood going through the breast goes from the breast into the armpit, or what we call the axilla. So if breast cancer cells were going to travel, statistically, they would go to a lymph node in the armpit, which is why when we do our standard breast cancer surgeries, the surgeon routinely will sample some lymph nodes in the underarm to look to see if there's cancer there.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chris. We appreciate the call. Dr. Ami Nagandi, our guest today on Medical Monday. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And now Helen in Germantown. Helen, you're on.
Hi. My 82-year-old sister just died from triple negative, and it had metastasized, and it was just about a year after a supposedly clean mammogram. And so my first question is, how normal is that? And, you know, should she have been having a different form of screening? Should we all be having a different form of screening? Because it was so advanced, and she died fairly quickly, etc. And then the second question is, she did not test positive for the BRCA gene. Other members of my family have also not been tested for that. But we do have other incidences of breast cancer, including with some men. All of those people survived. They were minor. But I'm wondering what other routine testing, preventative testing, the women in my family should be having, since the BRCA gene is not an indicator for us.
So I think my first question would be, if you have the gene testing results, was it just the BRCA1 and 2 gene that was tested, or did these family members who had cancer? So the best person to test for a inherited form of malignancy or cancer is a person who actually had the cancer. So if these family members actually had the cancer, they were the ones who were tested. I would look to see, did they just have the BRCA1 and 2 genes tested, or did they have what we call panel testing? Because if they only had those two genes, there might be other genes that are in the family but just haven't been tested for. And two, if the full panel testing was done and that's negative, then the best way to screen for cancer is still mammograms and breast exams.
Okay, so I could ask her daughter. I'm not sure of the answer to that, so I will ask her daughter that. And you're saying that the panel testing is the better testing.
So the panel testing,
more thorough.
Correct. It looks at other genes that are associated with cancer, not just the BRCA1 and 2.
Okay. And then I'm not trying to start a lawsuit here or anything, but how likely is it that this could all happen within barely a year?
So triple negative breast cancer is the most aggressive type of breast cancer that we have today. And unfortunately, women who have triple negative breast cancer, the majority of those women can recur within the first 5 years after going into remission. It's the biology of the cancer. Unfortunately, I'm sorry for your loss.
Helen, thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Medical Monday today. Dr. Ami Nagandi of New York Oncology Hematology joins us. And that number once again is 800-348-2551. You mentioned genetic testing often in the BRCA1 and 2. What specifically have we learned about those markers? In other words, what is it that we're looking at that is abnormal there?
We're looking for very specific mutations that are known to be associated with increased cancer risk. So some women, lots of women actually, who get tested will have mutations in these genes, but those mutations are not what we call pathogenic. They're mutations of unknown significance or variants of unknown significance. Those variants, we don't do anything about until we get more information on them. They're not supposed to guide our treatment, any decision making. But what we're looking for is mutations in the DNA that are associated with increased risk of breast and ovarian cancer.
Is there, and I know there are clinical studies and clinical research trials, and NYOH is involved with many of them. Are there any studies that are being done where you turn the genes off? In other words, you see a marker early, and then you flip that switch and say, okay, well, we're going to turn that one off. We will change that in the other direction.
Being studied?
Yeah.
Nothing out that we can use right now.
Well, that's a little evasive. So there are people looking into that.
Correct.
But nothing that you can use.
Correct. So women who have BRCA2 mutation, ovarian cancer, breast cancer, actually now pancreatic cancer, there are what we call PARP inhibitors. They're molecular inhibitors, which means they target certain molecules in parts of the cell. And those can be used in women who have BRCA mutations with certain types of cancer. So that is a targeted therapy that's very exciting, and it's out there, and it's ready to be used in a certain population.
What population?
Women who already have cancer. It's not being used right now in the preventative setting, but I know it's being looked at.
Okay. Our guest today is Dr. Ami. Aren't you having fun? Dr. Ami Nagandi of New York Oncology Hematology is our guest. It's Medical Monday, 800-348-2551. Let's grab another call or two before our next break. And Laura in New Paltz. Laura, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Thank you for this informative show. I just want to ask you a few things, and then I'll listen off the air.
Okay.
Do you have a large percentage of studies showing that breast implants cause cancer? And the second question is, have you noticed studies or results about cell phones and radiations causing cancer? And, you know, what the percentage is on that. And then the last question is, I was wondering if the whole cancer community is working on or can work on having a safer chemotherapy, because sometimes people seek alternatives to heal their cancer, and it seems to be more holistic stuff, natural stuff, juicing, better diet, better lifestyle. And then, then other people do chemotherapy, which seems kind of toxic. Their hair falls out. So just wondering about safer chemo methods. So those are my three questions, and thank you very much.
Thanks, Laura. A lot to unpack there, but go ahead, Doc. Well, the first question, I believe, was about, well, let's just start with the last question, chemotherapy and people using alternate methods, lifestyle methods, juicing, health, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. So all of our treatment for breast cancer is based on clinical trials, and you can argue that lack of evidence does not equate evidence of lack. So just because a study wasn't done doesn't mean it doesn't work. But the reason we are so good at putting women into remission for so long is all based on these clinical trials. There are no large clinical trials looking at these alternative ways to treat breast cancer. So what I know is if a woman has breast cancer for which chemotherapy is recommended, I can give her, this is your chances of it coming back if you do chemo. These are your chances of it coming back if you don't do chemo. And there are some women who look at a 5% risk of recurrence or a 10% risk of recurrence or 15% risk of recurrence and say, you know, chemotherapy is not for me. And that's okay. We're making this joint decision making. We're talking about the risks and benefits. Chemotherapy is not recommended for all women with breast cancer now. One of the advantages of being in an era of cancer treatment where so much research has already been done is we are getting better and better at personalizing treatments according to the stage and type of tumor a woman has. So we don't want to over-treat women, but we don't want to under-treat women. We want to give them just the right amount. And so there are less women today getting chemotherapy than there used to be 15 years ago.
What are the chemicals in traditional chemotherapy?
There are several different chemotherapy regimens. So adriamycin, cytoxin, taxotere, paclitaxel, these are chemotherapy agents that have been out for a long, long time. you know, when I talk to women about chemotherapy and as part of survivorship, is not only following women after they're in remission from their breast cancer for risk of breast cancer coming back, but it's also following them for long-term side effects from the treatment for breast cancer. Robin Roberts on Good Morning America was very open about her breast cancer journey. She was diagnosed in 2007 with triple negative breast cancer. She got chemotherapy, and 5 years after chemotherapy, she developed a pre-leukemic disease called myelodysplastic syndrome, and that was due to one of the chemotherapy agents she got. So she is the person who is the face of, you know, chemotherapy, this particular chemotherapy side effect. She underwent a bone marrow transplant, which was donated from her sister, and she looks amazing today.
Yeah.
But she's had quite a journey, and she's been really open about it, which I think is so helpful for women who are also going through breast cancer.
Dr. Ami Nagandhi is our guest. I find this fascinating. When you talk to your patient about a possible course of treatment, then it's incumbent upon you to say, hey, look, this particular chemo has this side effect, and it may not be a good one.
Correct.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Tell you what, Zach the engineer, let's take a break, and then we'll come back and hit the phones once again. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Dr. Ami Nagandhi is our guest from New York Oncology Hematology. This email came in from Jill in the Hudson Valley. Jill writes, I had a double mastectomy 10 years ago for early stage breast cancer, very early stage. There was no follow-up treatment. Can I still be screened with mammograms, ultrasound, or MRI?
So generally, once a woman has had a bilateral mastectomy, we do not screen with mammogram, ultrasound, or breast MRI with an asterisk. The asterisk is if you're concerned there was breast tissue left back or breast tissue left deep that you didn't quite, the surgeon wasn't able to quite get out, and then you want to monitor for that breast tissue. Women who have had bilateral mastectomy have a lifetime risk of recurrent breast cancer of 1% to 2%. Mm. And that is because we can have ectopic breast tissue that's tucked behind a muscle. But again, a mammogram or ultrasound isn't going to pick that up.
Now, Jill mentioned very early stage. Is it common to have a double mastectomy for having very, very early stage breast cancer? Or would you try some other treatments first?
I don't have specific details of her particular breast cancer. So in general, women who have early stage breast cancer, including our younger women, if their genetic testing is negative, which means they don't have a gene like BRCA1 or 2 or one of the other genes that gives them a higher likelihood of developing another breast cancer, we are not recommending mastectomy. We recommend a lumpectomy with radiation therapy, in that it's less, has less what we call morbidity, which means it's less time in the operating room, it's a quicker recovering time, it's less time away from work and your family, and it has the same outcomes.
Are the rates of mastectomies going down?
I actually don't think they're going down. I actually think that they are higher than what we would expect them to be considering our standard recommendations. And I think a lot of women are electing mastectomies more often for various reasons.
Are some overly, in other words, are they done too often? Are people getting too scared and jumping the gun?
You know, that's so hard to say. I think one thing when you're told you have breast cancer, a lot of decisions are emotional decisions. You're in this very high emotional state. You're trying to make good decisions for yourself. And there are some women who medically need a bilateral mastectomy. And then there are some women who don't elect to have it because they don't want to deal with having to get a mammogram every year and have to worry about an abnormal finding and have to get a biopsy again. So I think there's a whole host of reasons why a woman would choose a mastectomy. We do try to talk to them about what what reconstruction looks like. Reconstruction is not a procedure. It's a process that is usually a multi-step process. So it's not that you go and you get your mastectomy and you get your implants and that's it, you're done. It's usually a multi-step process. And right. So women need to understand, if they choose a mastectomy and they want reconstruction, what it looks like. There are lots of women now who are choosing mastectomy without reconstruction. And I think that's being much more accepted.
Dr. Ami Nagandi is our guest today. And before we jump back on the phones, just prior to the last break, you mentioned a word I have not heard before, and that is survivorship. Tell me about that.
So every woman living with breast cancer is a survivor. So survivorship means you've had this malignancy and you need to get back to your life in some way or shape or form. Majority of women now that get diagnosed with breast cancer, we are able to put into remission, which is fantastic. But survivorship, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. I think a lot of us feel, the layperson feels that once you have a cancer diagnosis, you get treated, it's over and you move on with your life. Mm. I think that's a very misconstrued notion. Women and the 1% of men who've had breast cancer, once they go through a cancer diagnosis, are never really the same again. You have to find a new normal. And even after cancer is put into remission, things that we follow women for are their bone health. The treatments we give them can affect their bones, put them at risk of osteoporosis and fracture, and that's really important. We're learning more and more now that because women are living so long, that the risk of heart disease can be higher than women who didn't have breast cancer. So we have to really monitor them for...
Why is that?
So the treatments we give for breast cancer, it can affect cardiac health. There's a chemotherapy called adriamycin that can cause premature heart disease in the long term. Our anti-hormonal treatments can increase risk of cardiovascular events because they mess with our hormones and can increase our cholesterol and things like that. They can cause weight gain, and weight gain we know is related to heart health.
Right.
There is a huge component of anxiety and survivorship, which I think is not really well known or talked about, but I see it all the time. You know, women are done their treatment and everyone expects them to be happy and grateful, but they're really anxious. And a lot of times the reason for that is, you know, when you're going through treatment, you have all these eyes and hands on you all the time. And when you're done your treatment, you're sort of set out into the world and you know, you're not seen once a week or every other week or once a month. And that can be very scary for women to, you know, go from being monitored and people watching you really closely when you're undergoing treatment to your doctor saying, all right, I'll see you in 3 months.
But I mean, you're a medical doctor, you're dealing with illnesses. How do you have time in your day then to deal with anxiety of patients? It seems to me that you probably have enough on your plate already.
So I don't have time for a 45-minute sort of sit down and let's talk about this, but it's something that I try to bring up to my patients because I'm more aware of it myself. And if counseling is going to be helpful to them, then I recommend counseling. Also, you know, people in this cancer journey that oftentimes get overlooked are the caregivers, the partners. And I think it's important to bring them into the conversation, you know, not only to tell me more about the patient, how they're doing at home, but also to see how are they doing. I mean, it's hard to see your loved one go through cancer and treatment and everything that comes with it. So I'm now that I've been doing this for a few years now, I'm more aware of it. So I try to bring it up and then either refer them to their primary or a therapist if that's going to be helpful to them.
Dr. Ami Nagandi is our guest of New York Oncology Hematology. 800-348-2551 is the number. We go to Amy in New Lebanon. Amy.
Yes. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm in my 50s, and I've been getting mammograms since I was 40. I have dense breasts, and every year, it seems in the last 5 years, there's always an issue, and then I have to have an ultrasound, and I feel like I'm just playing a waiting game. Is mammogram and ultrasound my best option? I've actually looked at prophylactic bilateral mastectomy, and there's a great website called Breast Free. I work in the OR, so I've seen reconstruction, and I don't necessarily feel I need that. So I guess my big question is, I feel like this waiting game. Every time I have a mammogram, there's an issue. I have calcifications and dense breasts. Should I just have an ultrasound? I don't know.
So in women with dense breasts that I see, and I know I see a skewed part of the population, it's women who have been referred to me because they have breast issues. So in those women who have dense breasts, I definitely do recommend ultrasound. I don't have enough information to be able to tell you is bilateral mastectomy the way to go. I don't have enough information, and I think that that is definitely a conversation to be had with your breast surgeon, or if you haven't seen a breast surgeon, that's a good person to see to talk about if that is the way to go. Ideally, if you have an abnormality on your imaging but haven't had a biopsy, it's much harder to make a decision, because if you have an abnormality, gets biopsied, it's abnormal, that puts you in a different category than somebody who has abnormal breast imaging but whose breast tissue is totally normal.
Amy, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551, the number. Dr. Ami Nagandi is our guest today on Medical Monday. Barbara in Ballston Lake. Barbara.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I had breast cancer surgery 2 years ago, October. And I just wanted to comment that I was diagnosed by my gynecologist and as a suspicious situation. And she moved so quickly that I went from that to imaging to, I'm just kind of reinforcing the fact that as quick as you can act on something, and of course, I was fortunate with her, and she got me to surgery, and I had some lymph nodes removed, and I'm 2 years out now, and I just think that quick analysis is so important, and I did have radiation, and I would like to just suggest, and maybe this is not true, but I had pinpoint radiation with New York Oncology, and they were fine and all, but I think it's affected my voice, and I think that everyone that has radiation should request a cover around your neck because it's affected my voice, and I just want to throw that out. I tried tamoxifen after the radiation, and it just was not good at all for me. And so I guess I'm in, I don't know, you don't use the word remission, but whatever. I had just got back to my cancer doctor, and I had a good
good check. Analysis. Okay, good. Yeah. That's good, Barbara.
Well, that way I think I'm lucky. And I'm older, too, so there was no one in my family that I know of that had cancer. So.
Well, thanks. Thanks for the call, Barbara. We appreciate it very much. 800-348-2551 on this Medical Monday. Dr. Ami Nagandi is our guest today. And Patty in the Hudson area. Hello, Patty.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am 7 years out after a lumpectomy with clean margins, radiation treatment, and I'm just off of the adjuvant therapy. I had a few years with the aromatase inhibitor and then like a year and a half with tamoxifen, and now I'm not on anything. And I was told during this whole – so I had estrogen and progesterone receptor positive cells. Mm-hmm. And I was told at one point during the recovery process to avoid soy. And I am wondering now if it's safe to return to soy, non-GMO organic, of course.
Yes, it is safe to return to soy. There is this theoretical concern with soy, but when it was looked at in real-life setting of populations of people who ate a lot of soy and those who didn't, there was no lower risk of breast cancer in the population of people who ate a lot of soy. So I wouldn't say eat a soy-based diet, but if you want to introduce soy back into your diet and have it in a reasonable amount.
Moderation, as they say.
Correct. Moderation, yeah. As they say. That's totally reasonable.
Okay. Patty, thanks a lot for the call. Now over to Marlene in Warwick. Marlene.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call, and it's a very informative program. And thank you, Doctor, for spending the time to help inform us all.
Of course.
My question is how often do you actually see ductal cancers when it comes to breast cancer? And I'd also like to ask, is there any research that says that breastfeeding, women who breastfeed, can have a lower risk of developing breast cancer later in life, assuming they are very much on top of the other risk factors, meaning control their, you know, manage their weight, no smoking? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So the majority of breast cancers are invasive ductal carcinomas. So the duct is a tiny tube. We have tons of them in our breasts, and they're the tubes that bring milk to the baby. So these ducts start in the breast and they all end in the nipple. And the majority of breast cancers are from cells that originate in the ducts of the breast. So breastfeeding can have a protective effect on risk of breast cancer, but there is no certain amount of time of, you know, you need to breastfeed for 3 years to lower your risk. So it's more of an association. It's something that we can see in general of women who have breastfed, women who have had their kids earlier versus later in life, women who have had more pregnancies. And the thought of that is that it during that period of time, you don't have a cyclical menstrual cycle that can affect your hormone levels, that can increase or decrease your risk of breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
There is no magical number of months of breastfeeding that
have they. Thank you for the call, Marlene. Well, why can't there be a magical number? Have they done enough studies on this?
You want to do the study?
Do I want to do the what? All right. Well, I can see we're getting near the end of the program.
I'm not aware of any studies.
Okay. Well, all right. I won't ask that question. Sue and Beacon. Sue, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I was just diagnosed with atypical ductal hyperplasia, and I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about that and if you recommend that I should get gene testing done as well.
So atypical ductal hyperplasia is an abnormal breast cell from the duct that is bigger than it should be, which is the hyperplasia portion of it. Atypical ductal hyperplasia is a risk factor for breast cancer. The next thing I do is, in a woman that I see with atypical ductal hyperplasia, besides getting family history, is to see if the breast cancer risk is high enough to warrant a breast cancer risk reduction agent, such as an anti-hormone pill. So it's a risk factor for breast cancer. If you have a family history of breast cancer, that should be discussed with a genetic counselor to see if you should have genetic testing or if somebody else in your family should have the genetic testing done. And then looking at your other personal history, see if your lifetime risk of breast cancer is high enough that you should be offered in breast cancer risk reduction agent. With atypical ductal hyperplasia, there is a risk of breast cancer, not in the year or two following this finding, but it's a lifetime risk of breast cancer. So I worry sort of years down the line. It can take up to 10 years for this atypical cell to develop into breast cancer if it's destined to develop into breast cancer.
All right, Sue, thanks a lot for the call. All right, Dr. Ami Nagandhi, I hope I didn't irritate you too much today.
No,
everything okay?
No, it was fun.
You come back again?
Of course.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Support comes from Villa Veritas Foundation, Kerhonkson, New York, honoring founder Jim Cusack, continuing his work for over four decades and four generations, helping the chemically dependent and their families battle addiction. VillaVeritas.org. Well, that's it for the show today. Once again, thanks to Dr. Ami Nagandhi of New York Oncology Hematology for joining us. Tremendous calls today. Really great to hear everybody chiming in. Zach Malloy is our engineer. Cantankerous, as always. Our phone's answered by Joe Makowitz. Our producer is Jim Lewis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Gene Gagnon will be back to answer your travel questions. Right now, stand by for The Media Project.